Hey, it's Farnoosh, and if I had to go back to my 19-year-old self and share her my one big piece of financial wisdom that I've learned in these 25 years, it's this. You can't save your way to wealth. You can't save your way to a comfortable retirement. You have to invest your money. Luckily, I got started in my early 20s. I learned that lesson early on, and I want to share the wisdom. I want to share what I've learned over these last 20-plus years investing in the stock market. I don't pick stocks. I don't pay lots of money to work with experts, and I've amassed a seven-figure portfolio slow and steady. I'm teaching my very unsexy tricks on Monday, April 29th, live at 3 p.m. Eastern. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com to learn more and save your spot. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com and sign up for my investing masterclass. Even if you can't make it live, everyone who registers will get the recording.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money, episode 789, Angela Duckworth, author of Grit.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Would you consider yourself gritty? Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Grit is being able to pursue long-term goals, even if that pursuit takes years. Grit is when you view your life like a marathon, not a sprint. It's when you don't consider a failure an endpoint. And today's podcast guest is the world's foremost expert on grit. And she is here to tell us how we can get more of it and why it is so important. Today, we're welcoming Angela Duckworth to the show. She is the New York Times bestselling author of the book Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance, which is now in paperback. She is a psychology professor at the University of Pennsylvania, where she earned her PhD, and she is the founder and CEO of Character Lab, a nonprofit that helps use psychological science to help kids thrive. Angela and I discuss how grit can actually be learned, her financial perspectives formed as the daughter of immigrant Chinese parents, Eastern versus Western parenting values, and of course, we had to talk about Crazy Rich Asians. Here is Angela Duckworth. Angela Duckworth, welcome to So Money. I'm a huge fan. Congrats on the paperback of Grit, now in stores. You must feel like you've come a long way since the first day the book published.
You know what I feel like I've come a long way from the first day my husband said, you should write a book on grit. I think the journey was the hardest while writing it, and much less hard to sign a book after you've written it.
So he was the one who planted the seed.
My husband came home one day and said, you know, you should really write a book. And I said, that is a terrible idea. And I also thought it was an impossible idea. I don't know about you, but I walk by these books in the airport and I think, gosh, who can write a whole one? They're so long. And I certainly didn't think I could. And it was very hard. And I cried a lot writing this book. It was maybe the hardest thing I had ever done to that point. But yeah, I'm proud of it. And my husband read it many times and gave me feedback. So I'm glad it's doing reasonably well.
You know what it takes to write a book? Grit. So it's very meta that you used your own power of grit to complete the book. And people can't get enough of this topic, I think, and you can tell me if this is part or some of the story. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of us maybe weren't the A student in school growing up. We don't consider ourselves high achievers, but we have this spirit of can-do-itness that I think our culture sometimes skips over, or we're not necessarily highlighted. I mean, there's no like award for like can do itness or like grit growing up in school. It's always like you got the A or the A plus or the 100%. So tell us a little bit about why you think it's become such a cultural phenomenon, grit, your obsession of late. And I do think it's a bit of a Western thing, because outside of, you know, I think Western culture, there are other things that may be deemed more worthy of, like, you know, what leads to success.
Well, there is actually at least one school that I know of that has an award, and it's called the Non-Quitter of the Week.
I love it.
Isn't that great? And the student gets their picture taken, and then they get to hold up their award, and then they write about what they did, and they didn't quit. And they don't have to have won, actually. They don't have to have succeeded or come in number one, but just that they didn't quit. And I love that. I do think that there's some special American sounding, you know, the word grit for us, it probably brings up that Western true grit.
Gritty.
You know, John Wayne. And actually, if you see the movie, either the old one or the new one, it's about a sheriff, you know, who you think maybe he's the one who has grit. But actually, there's a 14-year-old girl named Maddie. And the whole Western is about how her parents were murdered and she's going to avenge their deaths. And she's the gritty one. I'll tell you, I don't think it has anything to do with John Wayne's grit. Mm. It's really about this little girl. But is it really American? I mean, I can't tell you how many people I meet from, you know, different countries, from Asia, from Europe, from Africa, that tell me that in their country, they have a word that translates to grit, and that it's part of their cultural tradition.
Hmm. I think also when we think of, maybe because I feel like the American dream and the pursuit of that is such a gritty pursuit, that you can come here as an immigrant too. And if you work hard and you stay the course, and really the effort does pay off for so many immigrants when they come here, that's why they continue to come here. It's the land of opportunity. But I did watch Crazy Rich Asians recently.
I watched it twice.
Yeah, loved it. And I guess I'm taking a page out of that, or a scene out of that movie, where, or a page out of the book, where the crazy rich Asian mother, who was not interested in her future daughter-in-law's quote unquote passion for her career. She was like, that's sweet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that is interesting, because, you know, I am Chinese by ethnic heritage. And so I had to watch the movie twice. And in fact, I probably will go see it again. And there is that mother-in-law character who comes from, you know, this Asian tradition that you have to sacrifice for your family, and also that it's selfish to follow your individual interest and your individual passion. For example, if it's just good for the family that you become a doctor, you become a doctor. It doesn't matter that you happen to want to be an artist or something else. And I definitely felt like during that scene that there was something very spot on about that observation. But I will tell you that I also have a, like, practically a line of diplomats from Asian countries who are waiting in my office to talk to me about really reinvigorating the idea of passion in their cultures. You know, if you have a culture where kids are brought up to work hard and to study, but they're not creative and they're not following interests that keep them up at night and, you know, wake them up in the morning really eager to, like, learn something new, make connections to their everyday experience, then I don't think you're going to actually have a very vibrant economy. And I think that is in part why a lot of Asian countries are thinking it's not just perseverance they need. They also need passion.
Right, because that's what actually keeps you devoted to whatever it is you're working on. You bring up childhood, and you talk about in your book and in your research that grit is something that can be taught at a young age. So tell us a little bit about, we have a lot of parents who come and listen to the show. I'm a mom of two. You're a parent. What's the best way to instill grittiness in a kid?
My kids are 15 and 16. How old are yours?
Very young. They're 4 and 1.5.
Oh, okay. So you're a little bit behind the teenage years yet. I have yet to happen. So I will say that when kids are really young, you know, preschool, et cetera, you might think, well, you know, what is there to do now on the grit side? Because grit is something that seems, you know, very adult, right? Pursuing something for years and years that you're, you know, committed to. But kids, even at the earliest ages, for example, preschool and even younger, are observing their parents. There was a very, very exciting study done recently where essentially babies are like watching, you know, grownups try to do a puzzle that's very hard, like take keys off a ring, and it's just really, really hard and they're struggling. When very, very young children watch this struggle and then the adult finally gets it, they actually internalize that lesson. And then when you give the child a different game, they work harder compared to kids who just watch grown-ups do things and everything comes easily. And I think the lesson for parents is that for young kids, as well, frankly, as older kids, what you're modeling is not invincibility. What you're modeling is not perfection. What you're modeling is struggle, you know, the messiness. You know, I cried in front of my two girls when I was writing this book, and I didn't hide those tears. I didn't want them to think that I was always strong. I wanted them to know that I doubted myself, but I wanted them to see me wake up the next morning, make myself a cup of coffee, get a hug from my husband, sit down at the computer, and work again. And I think that's the kind of role modeling that starts early, early in life and extends all the way through.
Yeah, show them the process, show them the payoff of the of the hard work. I think that's, we also, I feel like I've come across similar advice when it comes to our finances. You know, a lot of parents want to shield the realities of their finances from their children. If you have debt, or maybe the budget 1 month is really tight. I know my parents, again, I think as immigrants, they kind of played both sides of the coin. I feel like they sometimes would say, we can't afford that, and here's why. Or sometimes they would try to portray a lifestyle that really didn't add up to what the numbers showed, because they wanted me to feel secure, or like, you know, I don't know, happy. Can you blame them? but I've also heard that if you're in a relationship and you have kids and you're arguing about money, you know, as long as it's contained, like, have your kids witness the back and forth, but most importantly, have them see the resolution. There was something we disputed about, but then we came up with a plan and now we're working it through.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that's, you know, always a judgment call. You know, I don't think kids should know everything, obviously, but I do think, you know, sharing, at least for grit, you know, your vulnerability, and then also, you know, the resolution of that, which is that, you know, you do get up again. Also, I am very open with my kids about how much I love my work. You know, I asked them once, and I guess maybe also because I'm a mom, and, you know, when I was growing up, my mom, she was raised very traditionally, and her words to me, literally, when I graduated from college, were, now you're ready to be a wife. So I did actually have some guilt when I was working and my kids were younger, and I felt like, oh my gosh, maybe I should be that mom who's like, you know, home and more available. So when my kids were, you know, in elementary school and middle school, and they were old enough to ask, I said to them, you know, are you kind of disappointed that you ended up getting a really, really gritty mom? Because, you know, I'm not like, you know, like just around and like asking you about what you're working on, because I'm working on my stuff. And they said that at some points when they were growing up, that they did wish that I was, you know, baking chocolate chip cookies for them when they were home. But they really, in a way, now that they are becoming their own people, are so glad that they had a role model of a woman who loves her work and is devoted to it. This doesn't mean that every woman, I think, has to do, you know, exactly what I did, but it was very freeing to me to realize that, you know, in many ways our kids are relying on us, but not least of which to just show them a path in life that, you know, they themselves, you know, could in some ways model themselves after.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. When it comes to maintaining good financial health, I think a key component is being able to track your progress, to see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place. Now, thanks to our sponsor, Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views from multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. As a financial journalist and as an investor, Yahoo Finance has been my go-to site for years to access the tools and data behind the markets. It's also where I like to get a holistic view of the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, research charts, and so much more. Yahoo Finance is also where you can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
That's a really important, I think, reassurance for women who, again, you know, we feel guilty all the time. Like there's not a deficit of guilt as a woman. And I do love hearing studies and also anecdotes from moms who later in life, their children do grow up and say, you know what, maybe when I was six, I wish you were home for a day or two or went on field trips with us. But, you know, what you do, which is that you share how much you love your job, that's not for nothing. I mean, that's also part of the modeling and why they ultimately make that connection that mom working is a healthy thing, is a good thing, is an aspirational thing. You touched on your childhood a little bit and like your mom, and I feel like we have some similarities there with my Persian mom. You know, we got a lot of ironic advice growing up. Like I got the advice, like, you know, get your education, shoot for the stars, get the promotion, but you know, be a breadwinner. I don't know about that, Farnoosh, you know, or
yeah.
Yeah. Like you should still marry rich.
That's the free advice.
So shifting over to money a little bit, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your upbringing as it pertained to money, and how maybe you had a first experience learning about it or a memory that really still sticks out.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting back to having, you know, traditional parents, my parents were born and raised in China. And then, of course, they did immigrate to the Philadelphia area and then eventually had three kids, including me, the last one. And they did bring with them a kind of traditional Chinese view of, you know, division of responsibility. So my dad paid all the bills. My dad, you know, made the money, and my dad thought about the money. And then my mom cooked meals and, you know, made sure that the grocery bills weren't too high, but it was very, very, very traditional. It's just an interesting thing then to watch how I am handling things. My husband and I are much more 50-50. Like, he's the one who cleans up the kitchen. I won't say that I'm doing the investing because I don't have a lot of, you know, interest or expertise there, but we're really just 50-50 when it comes to just like the general division of household responsibilities. And then I've got these two girls, and I think of myself as pretty, I don't know, progressive. And I feel like I've come a long way since my mom's generation. But I think they look at me and they sometimes hear things that I say and they'll say, you know, because they have yet another, you know, advance on me. And so they will say things that, you know, they feel like, oh, I'm being, I'm thinking stereotypically about gender roles. Or, you know, sometimes I'll say to my girls, like, oh, I should really just be a boy about this and, you know, stand up for myself. And I thought that was maybe helpful. It was kind of offensive to them. They're like, what do you mean be a boy? Girls are boys. You know, girls can just do anything that boys can do. So I think history is changing, but I can even see between my mother's generation, myself and my girls, how these things are changing quite rapidly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, but the thing that you point out about sort of like these gender role beliefs, or gender expectations or gender beliefs. Sometimes those are hard to shift. They're like so ingrained in us. Like even when you're like, you know, I want to act like a boy or like, you know, put on a, you know, there are a lot of sayings that we've adopted, but really, you know,
it's hard. I think maybe this is why it's such a good thing that we have, you know, generations, right? Yeah. So it's a good thing that, you know, our kids are growing up, and in a way it's like rebooting the computer, you know, like they did not inherit all of our baggage. And they kind of start anew, and they have such a fresh perspective, I think, on things like gender and of course other things as well. Overall, I would say that, you know, it's been helpful to me to even have kids because they kind of pull you into the future.
Have you had any reflections or has anything come up in your work that correlates your research on grit and people's financial lives? So there's clearly like a correlation between having grit and your success in life at large, but very specifically work and career. But what about things like your money?
Yeah, like your money. Well, I'll tell you that grit is part of a family of personality traits that is broadly called the conscientiousness family. And that includes grit, but also things like dependability, the tendency to follow rules, conscientiousness, orderliness, attention to detail. I mean, it's the family of things that you're like, oh, I hope my accountant has all those things, right? Like, you know, careful, rule abiding. And I would say that in that family, you know, the most predictive of these traits for your financial success and well-being, really, right? Financial security is self-control, being able to delay gratification and make choices that are good for you in the long run, like saving for retirement, even when it makes a short-term sacrifice necessary, like not buying that pair of shoes and instead, you know, using that discretionary income to put into savings. So it's not exactly grit. It's a cousin, you know, in this family. But I also study that. And I will say that one of the big insights from that science, you know, the science of self-control, is that there are learnable strategies that anybody, I mean, say somebody comes to you and says, oh, I'm a wreck when it comes to my finances and my money. They can learn strategies that will help them to delay gratification and put away money for later and, you know, save more today.
There's that marshmallow effect that they did with kids all those years ago. I think it was Stanford, and then they found that. So basically these kids were tested, like who was willing to wait to eat the marshmallow. And then 20 years later, they found those kids and they found that those who waited, who had self-control, measured better in a lot of different ways, from their finances to their, you know, progress in their schooling and career and all of that.
That's exactly right. The marshmallow test was given to kids. They were at a little nursery school called the Bing Nursery School on the campus of Stanford. So they weren't, you know, it wasn't like a
they had good genes.
Sample. Yeah, they had, those are somewhat unusual kids, but they were followed their whole lives. I think they're now in middle age. And, you know, they end up, the kids who waited longer for two marshmallows instead of gobbling up one right away, because that was the choice. You're 4 years old in this study, and you're given a choice between two marshmallows later or one marshmallow right away. By the way, all the kids say they're going to wait. They say, I'll have to. Are you sure? Yeah. And then the question is, can they really wait? And the longer they wait, the better off they do. By the way, there's some very recent science on much bigger samples, not just Stanford preschoolers. And, you know, the effects are still there, but they're smaller than the original studies. Nevertheless, I do think that this ability to wait for things that are good for you in the long run, so much of managing your own money is about that, it's almost like a metaphor, right? Like two marshmallows later versus one now is not only a scientific test, it's also a very accessible metaphor for what we all need to do on a daily basis. And in that study, when you, for example, give kids a little bit of a boost in these strategies that I mentioned, I'll just say one because I think it applies at any age. You know, making a plan, it sounds so simple, but when little kids are waiting for the marshmallow, you know, trying to wait for two instead of having one right away. If you help them with like a little plan about what they're going to do, you know, just for a second, they just think like, how am I going to act when this actually happens? It can help them to be more self-controlled. And for financial things, you know, rather than just sort of, you know, living life, you know, moment by moment, you know, having a plan for what you hope to do next week, you know, do you hope to, you know, bypass the coffee shop every day? Is that what you, write it down, make a little plan. It takes 10 seconds. That actually is a very, very powerful strategy for enacting self-control in your own life.
Yeah. And by the way, like not eating the marshmallow, also good for your waistline. And sometimes when you delay gratification, that's a good thing. Like you realize, I don't actually want the cookie, you know, like you have to sometimes give yourself distance to be able to make rational decisions.
This idea of distance, is really, really at the core of so many strategies for self-control. It's actually, there's a term in science called psychological distance. And for example, in those marshmallow studies, you know, one way that you can create distance is to, you know, what they would say to these little kids waiting is like, you can pretend that the marshmallow is just a picture, that it's not real. So they would actually literally say to the kids, like, you know what, you can put your fingers around, like pretend it's a framed picture. And they would actually draw their fingers in the air. And those kids actually were able to wait longer. That's just a way of putting distance, mental distance, psychological distance, and whatever trick you can use. I mean, some people would say, you know, I want to, you know, go to the coffee shop and buy a, you know, pumpkin spice latte for $6. But I know that, you know, my mother wouldn't do it if she were me. Or, you know, you can use that kind of distance, like kind of pretend you're a responsible person, or, you know, pretend that this is a decision that you're making for tomorrow, not for right here in the moment. Any way to put distance between you and an emotional decision is a way to help you make a more farsighted choice.
I love that. Didn't think we were going to talk so much about money from your book, Grit, but this has been really insightful. Our sponsor for the show is Chase Slate, and I'm a brand ambassador, and I've been asking guests, and I'm going to ask you about a recent purchase that maybe you shared somewhere online or offline. The reason is that Chase Slate did this really comprehensive study into our spending and behavior, and it's called the Credit Outlook Survey. And one of the takeaways was that a majority of young people, millennials, maybe it's not a surprise, recently bought something and shared it on Instagram. Mm. So we've become this culture of like sharing purchases for whatever reason. It's a very popular thing to do. I don't do so much of that for myself on Instagram, but I am curious about in your life recently, what's been something that you've bought that you were proud of or excited about that you shared? What was it?
Well, yeah, I think I'm definitely not. I mean, I'm too old to be a millennial, unfortunately. So, you know, I am not in the generation that grew up like sharing everything on social media. In terms of purchases that I probably, you know, the thing I spend the most money on is food. And I love to share food. So, you know, I bought chocolates recently and shared them. The purchases that lead to experiences are the ones that are the most meaningful, right? As opposed to just like objects, right? Like, but things that lead to, you know, sharing a box of chocolates with a bunch of people and then, you know, enjoying them together, that ends up being, for me, kind of the best way to spend money.
Yeah, it's an experience at the end of the day, and that does actually lift happiness.
Yes, as we know from scientific research.
Yes, it's proven.
Yes, exactly. True.
As if we needed more reasons to buy chocolate. So you mentioned the importance of having a financial plan. Another personal question, if I may, what's Angela Duckworth's financial plan, especially now with the success of the book and your notoriety? And I mean, how has your life changed and how is it going to change because you want it to?
I have no change in my lifestyle pre and post the book. We live in a row house in Philadelphia, and right now we have no plans to change our house. I don't own a car. My husband has a car. I walk everywhere in the city, but I'm not going to go out and buy a fancy car. I mostly am thinking about ways that because I have a nonprofit called Character Lab, and we work on all the stuff that I talk about with you, but we work on it really for kids. And, you know, can we give scientific insight to parents in the form of actionable advice? And can we do that for free, especially so that we can reach, you know, all parents, including parents from, you know, lower income communities? So for me, honestly, I am literally thinking every morning when I wake up, you know, how do I raise more money for this nonprofit? And so a lot of my financial planning energy goes into this organization as opposed to us as an individual household.
I love it. And you can follow at the Character Lab.
Exactly. Awesome. We are on social media and we have a website called characterlab.org, and everything is philanthropically supported. So literally everything on our website, all the videos, we have Wynton Marsalis narrating a video on practice. We have activities where kids can develop their curiosity. They're all based on scientific research and they're all 100% free.
I love it. By the way, I got married in Philadelphia. It is truly the city of love.
It is. That's
they're not wonderful. Calling it the city of brotherly love anymore, are they?
I don't know what the branding campaign is for Philadelphia. They are doing XOXO on the billboards. So I think they're trying to do the love part. Maybe they're going to drop brotherly.
Yeah, it's everyone's love. It's great. Angela Duckworth, thank you so much. It was a real privilege to connect with you finally as a fan. And thank you for the conversation. Congrats on the paperback and good luck with the Character Lab.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation.
To learn more about Angela, you can go to her website, angeladuckworth.com. Also, characterlab.org is her nonprofit. The book is called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Angela is on Twitter at AngelaDuckW. And if you haven't checked out her TED Talk, definitely do. It's worth it. If you missed any of this, no worries. Just head over to SoMoneyPodcast.com where you can download the transcript and grab the audio. You can also click on Ask Farnoosh and leave me your questions for our Friday episodes. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Happy October 1st. I hope your day is so money. You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.